Compassionate Mahatma Vidura could not stand to see the Pandavas distressed at any time. Therefore, he did not disclose this unpalatable and unbearable incident because calamities come of their own accord. Please repeat, compassionate Mahatma Vidura.
Compassionate Mahatma Vidura.
Could not stand to see.
Could not stand to see.
The Pandavas distressed at any time.
The Pandavas distressed at any time.
Therefore, he did not disclose.
Therefore, he did not disclose.
This unpalatable and unbearable incident.
This unpalatable and unbearable incident.
Because calamities come of their own accord.
Because calamities come of their own accord.
Okay, Prabhus, I wanted to ask you again if everybody can mute, please, at this moment. Thank you.
Okay, I assume I'm not muted. Okay, all right. I heard the unmuted tone, so I guess we're good to go. All right. Srila Prabhupada's purport. According to Niti Shastra, civic laws. By the way, Niti means regularly or daily. Niti Shastra, so I assume this is Shastra for sort of like daily, everyday happenings. According to Niti Shastra, civic laws, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others. Distress comes upon us in its own way by the laws of nature. So one should not aggravate it by propaganda. For a compassionate soul like Vidura, especially in his dealings with the beloved Pandavas, it was almost impossible to disclose an unpalatable piece of news like the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, he purposely refrained from it. Nantapriyam durvishaham rinang svayam upastitam navedyat sakarono dukitan drashtum akshamaha om agyana timirandasya gyananjana salakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha vanchit kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So, as we proceed with this chapter, we're going to find that Vidura is going to speak very powerfully and in a very direct and cutting way as he attempts to bring Dhritarashtra to his spiritual senses. His words are going to become very, very strong. But it's being pointed out here that he is not going to talk about the things within this material world that for all intents and purposes, you can't really do much about. There's actually a prayer that is spoken in the 12-step programs. That would be like Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. I think there's a Cocaine Anonymous. There's probably all kinds of them. Overeating Anonymous, I'm speculating on that one. But they have a prayer called the Serenity Prayer. And they're really saying the same thing. They're saying, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that's important for us in spiritual life, to have that vision. What is it that we really can't do anything about, and what is it that we can actually change? I mean, Krishna's already certified that this material world is a place of misery. And no matter what we do within this world, you just can't fix it. You may be able to make it a little bit better. You can improve it slightly, but you can't fix it. And ultimately, it's going to be a place of misery. Just like I like that example that we sometimes hear about the boatman who is pulling his boat up the river. He's walking on the bank of the river, and he's dragging with a long, long rope his boat. And he has a long distance to go pulling this boat with its load of cargo up against the currents of the river. And being a very poor boatman, he's barefoot. And as he walks along the bank, he's always stepping on stones and burrs and pieces of wood and splinters. And his feet are always very, very sore. So he's thinking, I've got a solution. Now, he's not able to actually enact his solution, but within his mind, he's picturing the way to solve this is to, if I could just somehow get enough mattresses, hundreds of mattresses, and lay these mattresses right along the bank of the river, then as I walk up the river, I won't be hurting my feet so much. I mean, obviously, the question never enters his mind that why do I have to pull this boat anyway? He's accepting the fact that he's got to pull the boat. But the fact is, he doesn't have to pull the boat. He could do something else. But he's thinking, he's trying to find some solution. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that anywhere within this material world, by design, all places of misery. And even the heavenly planets. Krishna says, Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avartuno chuna mamupecha tukunteya Anyways, that's easy verse that slipped out of my mind. But anyway, from the heavenly planets to the lowest planets are all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death are always taking place. And there are so many examples that we read in Shastra, how even in the heavenly planets, so much harassment and difficulties can take place. And just like, for example, Hiranyakashipu, the great demon, who worshipped Lord Brahma by standing on his toes for many, many, many years. And not just standing on his tiptoes, but he's actually reaching his arms up into the sky and staring upwards. And in this condition, the great light was emanating from his head, and smoke began to come, and then heat. The top of his head started getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And it's described that this was the heat that was coming from the top of his head was equal to the heat of devastation at the time of the dissolution of the universe. So all of the lower planets and even the upper planetary system, they were in complete distress, unable to live because of the blazing heat. Due to the agitation, it's described in Shastra that the oceans became agitated. Of course, we know, especially in Hawaii, we should know what happens when the oceans become agitated. When the oceans put out strong waves, then we get like the tsunamis that are just that are devastating. Stars were falling from the sky, and we've also modern science tells us of the danger of if some asteroid or stellar bodies were to fall to the planet, how destructive it could be. They speculate that it could destroy all of life. But at any rate, it's described in Shastra. that even the stars were falling from the sky. And there was blazing fire in every direction, lower and upper planetary system. So the demigods, they all had to leave their abodes. And they and even Lord Indra was driven out of his abode and so on. And everyone was brought under the control of this demon, Hiranyakashipu. And even Lord Shiva, for example, was not apparently immune to the harassment of the demons. Just like that one demon, Frikasura, who was worshiping Lord Shiva. Actually, he approached Narada Muni and asked Naradaji, of all the demigods, or the three primary demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, which one is the most easily pleased? And understanding his nefarious intention, Narada Muni instructed, well, if you worship Lord Shiva, that he would be the most easily pleased, but of course he warned he's also the most easily displeased, Ashutosh. So Vrikasura built I think he went to Kedarnath up in a very, very elevated place in India, where it's only several months of the year it's not covered by snow. So he was quite elevated in Kedarnath, and he built the fire. And in this fire, you know, there's different types of sacrifices, sacrifices in the mode of goodness, sacrifices in the mode of passion, sacrifices in the mode of ignorance. So in this mode of ignorance, he started to offer into the fire his own flesh. And for one day, he was cutting flesh all off of his body and throwing into the fire, but Lord Shiva did not appear. And the second day, he's cutting more flesh. And the third day, and the fourth day, and the fifth day, and the sixth day. And after 6 days, he was becoming so frustrated because Lord Shiva did not appear from that fire. By the way, in purporting this in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada points out that that devotees have faith that when we offer into the fire, that Krishna is accepting within the fire. We don't have to see, particularly at our stage, Krishna manifesting himself in any other form but the fire. But because Vrikasura had such poor faith, he personally wanted to see Lord Shiva. So on the seventh day, he decided, well, I've offered all this flesh from my body. And by the way, his body was really in bad shape at that point. He decided that as a last resort, he was going to bathe himself as you bathe an animal before an animal is sacrificed. So he took bath, and on that seventh day, he was prepared to cut his own head off and offer his head into the fire. And finally, Lord Shiva came out of compassion for him. He thought, oh my God, he's gonna cut his head off. So he touched him immediately when he appeared, and then Vrikasura got his original body back again. And then Lord Shiva asked what benediction that he desired, and he said, well, I want the benediction that anyone who I touch, that their head will immediately break. He could kill anyone simply by his touch. Now, the motive ultimately of Vrikasura was he was very attracted to Parvati, Lord Shiva's wife. And he wanted to take her as his own, much as Ravana wanted to take away the consort of Lord Ram. So he began chasing Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was actually, it's described, Lord Shiva was trembling in fear. This is Lord Shiva, trembling in fear. So Lord Shiva ran and ran and ran. He went to Brahmaloka to take shelter there. And when he went before Lord Brahma, Lord Brahma was also so afraid of this demon that he didn't say a word, nothing. He remained completely silent. So Lord Shiva took off again, and he went elsewhere in the upper planetary system. He went to, he went to Chandraloka, and also approaching the sun god, rather than the sun god offering any help, he was petrified, and the sun god was also trembling in fear, and remained completely silent. He went to Brahmaloka, Chandraloka, and where else did he go? Chandraloka. I went to the moon. Anyway, all the demigods, wherever he went, the demigods were completely frightful. So then Lord Shiva, at that point, decided that he was going to go to Swetadweep and approach Lord Narayan. And as he was approaching, Lord Narayan could completely understand what the situation was. So he accepted this form of a beautiful young brahmachari, very renounced. He dressed himself with a deer skin covering. He had rudra beads, and he had a staff. And when they came running his way, he was so effulgent and so beautiful that both Lord Shiva and Vrikasura were very attracted to his beauty. And in order to sort of charm Vrikasura, the beautiful brahmachari said to him, "Oh, you must be awfully tired. You must be exhausted. You should be a little bit more thoughtful or cautious of maintaining, taking care of your body. What you need to come and you need to rest for some time." And he began to, I think he addressed him, Sakuni. He addressed him as the son of his father, indicating that he knew his own father. And basically, the Vrikasura became very charmed by the brahmachari. And so then he asked him, "Well, what is your mission? Maybe I can help you." And he explained, Vrikasura explained, that he was given this benediction by Lord Shiva that anyone he touched he could kill, and he wanted to get Lord Shiva. And then the brahmachari, Krishna in the form of the brahmachari, said, "Well, you can't trust Lord Shiva. He's crazy. He's a madman. He was his own father-in-law, Daksha, had cursed him to become a ghost. And look at him. He's covered with skulls and snakes wrapped around him. And he's crazy. You can't trust him. So in all probability, this curse that he, or this benediction he gave you, probably isn't real. And in fact, what you should do is go ahead and test it on yourself. And as soon as you find out that it isn't real, then you should kill him immediately." So then the Vrikasura proceeded to touch his own head, and that was the end of Vrikasura. But anyway, my point is that there's absolutely nowhere that we can go within this material world where it's not miserable, even in the heavenly planets. If we were to perform sacrifices and eventually go to heavenly planets, even if we do find some pleasure in the heavenly planets, it's all ultimately a place of misery. And what is it? Te tang bhuktva svargalokam vishalam. Even if we go svargalokam vishalam for many, many years, kshine punye, when our pious activities are exhausted, kshine punye marchalokam vishanti, once again we fall back down. And that's if we have a good time. But chances are, even in the heavenly planets, there are various types of misery that one will have to suffer from. So again, you can't change it. There's no way to sort of clean it up. It's kind of like if you took a piece of coal and you washed you decided I'm going to wash this coal, this piece of coal, and get it nice and clean, you can scrub it and scrub it and scrub it. But the more you scrub it, the more you'll find that it's pervasively, it is homogeneously, it's coal. You can't change the nature of it. Mayadakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kuntiya jagat viparvartate. Krishna says that this material nature, mayadakshena prakriti, it's all completely designed under my control. And suyate sacharacharam, and all the different forms or species that we may take, sacharacharam, achara and acharam are moving and non-moving beings. They're all beings and situations within this world which are to provide facility for the conditioned living soul basically to suffer in so many different ways. We see the pictures of Lord Durga, who's carrying the trident, and that trident is representing the threefold miseries, the miseries of the mind, the miseries of the body. Mind and body is the adiatmic, the adipotic, or the miseries that are coming afflicted from other living entities. And the adidaivic miseries, the miseries that are coming from the demigods and controllers, or sub-controllers of the universe. So even though it may look good, and we should have this vision, because, you know, Krishna, or shall I say Maya, Maya empowered by Krishna, Daivihi Shigunami Mama Maya Dharachaya, Maya empowered by Krishna can make the most obnoxious thing look very, very attractive. If anyone's ever eaten an apple that looks nice and shiny, it looks like this perfect apple, and you bite into it, it's just all kind of mealy and kind of rotten inside. Maybe there's worms or maggots in it. It looked nice, but in reality, not nice at all. So that's how this material world is built and designed. Like sweet rice, when sweet rice has sand in it, the sweet rice may look good. I know there's been a couple of times where we've set up cakes at the beaches when we've been doing weddings, and on a windy day, I remember one time in particular, a gust of wind came by, and it was very dry, so the sand was particularly dry and powdery that day. And when the gust of wind came by, it blew sand onto the cake. Now this particular cake was was a white cake. Somehow you couldn't really see the sand on it. And I mentioned to the people that there was some sand and blown into the cake, but they didn't care. They figured, well, they wanted to have it anyway. But after like one or two bites, everybody stopped eating because they could see the, you know, it looked good, but actually it was terrible. So, how are we doing for time here? So nothing can really be done, nor should we waste our time trying to improve the situation within the material world. All of the miseries that are coming to us, actually not just the miseries, but the apparent pleasures and the miseries are already coming of their own accord, whether we can see them presently or not. Actually, karma is coming to us in various different forms. There's aprarabdha. Aprarabdha means that reactions that are completely unmanifest. Aprarabdha. And they're waiting, just like seeds that are put in the ground and nothing, they haven't even begun to fructify or even germinate, but they're lying in seed. And we all have them. From our past lives, so many are there, and we shouldn't, you know, spend our time trying to worry so much about them. They're going to come regardless. So there's a prarabdha, there's a kuta. Kuta means reactions that are coming that are just about to manifest themselves. And there's bija, when they just barely start manifesting themselves. And prarabdha is when they become fully manifest. So you can't stop our karma. In the Brahma Samhita, it's stated, yastendra gopa atavindra mahosva karma bandhanu rupa palabhajana bandhanu rupa palambhajanam atanoti karmani nirdahati kintu chabakti bhajam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. So from the Indra Gopa, from a tiny, tiny little red insect, which lives for a very, very short period of time, all the way to Indra, the king of heaven, they are all subject to karma. Bandhanu rupa palabhajanam atanoti. This means that the fruits, palam, bhajanam atanoti, that they have to accept the sweet and the bitter fruits that are all coming to them. But karmani nirdahati kinshuta bhakti bhajam, only by devotional service. And this is now getting to the sort of the ultimate point of our verse today, that karmani nirdahati kinchucha bhakti bhajam, only by devotional service. Nirdahati means to burn up. Karmani nirdahati kinchucha bhakti bhajam, only by engaging in devotional service to Krishna and surrendering does our karma actually stop and one can elevate himself out of this material world. So in the subsequent chapters, we're going to see how, within this chapter, in the upcoming verses, Vidura is going to speak very, very strongly to Dhritarashtra, telling him that, you know, that all of your plans to become a king, which was his plan from the very beginning. He wanted to be a king, but due to his karma, which couldn't be changed, he was born blind, he couldn't become king. And in spite of all of his nefarious plans in order to get his sons to become king, that also failed. And now here he is in a very old and degraded condition of life. Vidura will describe to him how his mind, his memory is becoming weak. His teeth are falling out. His liver is beginning to fail. Mucus is beginning to form in his throat. He tells him he's living just like a household dog, eating little scraps that are offered to him by Bhima. He says, better that you now leave your home and take to the renounced order of life. And in these last few years of the few remaining moments, that you surrender yourself to Krishna. So anyway, I'm going to try to stick with our basic time here. So I'm going to read the translation again. So compassionate Vidura could not stand to see the Pandavas distressed at any time. Therefore, he did not disclose this unpalatable and unbearable incident because calamities come of their own accord. So you can unmute. And any questions, comments, corrections? Let's do it.
You just unmuted everybody.
Jai
Manichi, Hari Bol.
Jai, I do have a question. I don't understand at all why he didn't tell them. I mean, I know that if I were in that situation, first of all, I thought Dhritarashtra would know because of Sanjaya on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, you know, through the television sort of like that Sanjaya told him what was going on. And secondly, I'd be really upset if my whole family was killed and nobody told me.
Well, first of all, I'm going to philosophically speculate because I don't know all the fine nuances and details because I haven't read the Mahabharata. But one thing was for sure that he wanted to give the most essential instructions, and time was running out. It's not like a young man he was talking to. Dhritarashtra was like was right at the end. I mean, his body was completely falling apart. And there was no sense to try to go over. It's like in a dream, if someone's having a nightmare, there's two ways to deal with a nightmare. Number one is to try to enter into the nightmare and help them slay the dragons or wake them up from the nightmare. If you wake them up from the nightmare, everything's already fixed anyway. Just like when King Chitraketu, when his son died, Narada Muni didn't go into trying to fix the situation. He enlightened him, and then he at one point even brought his son back and showed the futility of even having his son. It wasn't his son anyway. In other words, if you enlighten someone, if someone is enlightened, then all these things automatically become, they're already included. It doesn't matter anymore. They're no longer significant. The family members didn't really die. They all, because they're not their bodies, and they weren't really his family. So by if you go to the root of the problem of illusion, then all that's automatically fixed. It doesn't matter anymore. That's one possible answer. Does that help?
That's a good one. A good one. Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I have a question. I also a little bit confused because, well, it says here, according to Niti Shastra, the civic laws, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others. But it's interesting how in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one should speak truth, but in a pleasing way.
Okay, now remember, we're talking about, maybe I didn't do a very good job, but I was trying to distinguish between, things you can fix and things you can't fix. He's going to speak, in one sense, an unpalatable truth from the spiritual perspective, not material perspective. I mean, he's going to tell Vidura, look at you're completely falling apart. You're a mess. You're living like a dog. I mean, that's in one sense not at all palatable, but that's fixable.
Mm-hmm.
That's fixable by enlightenment. We don't try to fix things we can't fix.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of trying to talk about something you can't really fix? There's more important things to deal with. To just call somebody pain, if it's just like, for example, suppose you meet someone and they have really big ears. Are you going to tell them about their big ears? I mean, it's not important. You can't say, you know what, you've got really big ears, but you know what, I'm going to touch your ears and magically they're going to be normal size ears again.
Mm.
You can't do anything about it.
All right. Okay.
If somebody has some, mold, I'm sorry?
I said it kind of addresses it more in the next sloka. I just kind of went ahead here just on my own here to see if maybe it gets more into depth in it about it in the next question.
All right, well, we'll leave that for our next speaker. I don't want to take the wind out of their sails. But can you understand the point, though, that there's, things you can't fix this material world, and everything, when one becomes Krishna conscious, he's completely satisfied. Krishna bhakta nishkam ata eva shanta mukti bhukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. No, everyone is disturbed in this world except a devotee. When we become a devotee, nothing disturbs us in this world. Absolutely nothing. Even the negative things that come, we can now take them in a positive way. Because we see, tate no kampan susamikshamano bunjana ivatma kritam vipakam hridvag vapor bia vidananamas te jiveti o mukti pade sadayabak. When these negative things are coming to us, families dying, everything's falling apart materially, a devotee takes it as a great blessing. But you've got to be a devotee to be able to appreciate that. Yasya hamanugrami harasye tadanam shanai. Tatodanam Tijantyasya Svajano Dukadukitam. It's described, the Shastra describes that the greatest mercy, the greatest blessing of Krishna is when he takes everything away materially and makes it all fall apart. If we take this verse, sort of unpack this verse a little bit, Tate Nukampan Susamikshamano, Yasyaham Anugrahami, Harasye Tadanam Chanai, when the Lord, out of his mercy, Tadanam Chanai, takes away all of your opulences of this world, Chanai gradually starts taking them all away, Tato Danam Chajantyasya, and Svajano Dukadukitam, when it's all taken away, you even become rejected by your family. Tato Danam Chajantyasya, Svajana. That means rejected by your own family, by your own people. Svajano dukadukitam, and one suffers misery after misery. Svajano dukadukitam. But that's a great mercy. A devotee can appreciate that. A devotee appreciates. Just like, for example, if you're at a restaurant, I hope we're not going to too many restaurants, but you're at the restaurant, if somebody brings you something, if the waitress brings you something that you don't like, you become disturbed by it. But if you're in the doctor's office and the doctor comes in and gives you a needle or cuts open some boil or something, even though he's bringing you pain, you thank him. Well, thank you very much, doc.
Yeah.
So a devotee, he's appreciating that when the negative things are coming from Krishna, we appreciate it. It's like they're wake-up calls, and they're opportunities to remember Krishna. Queen Kunti prayed, Vibarak santu takshasva tatra tatra jagaguru. Bhavato darshanam nasyara punar bhava darshanam. She prayed, bring on calamities, bring them on more and more, because she could then remember Krishna in that situation. Then she prays, Sneha pashme mangchindi, Dridham pandushu vrishnishu. She prayed to Krishna to cut the family ties. Dridham pandushu vrishnishu, the pandus and the vrishnis, cut my ties to them. So I'm fully, totally, 100% simply surrender to you. So therefore, in this particular case, if Dhritarashtra becomes enlightened, this doesn't matter anymore. All the people that died, it's all fixed.
I realized in my own life that everything is perfectly arranged by Krishna. And even if at the time of the moment it seems like a disaster, or how is it possible that Krishna handled this, there's always hindsight realization, even if it's a year or just a couple of days. And you realize that everything was arranged perfectly by Krishna. And even if it looks like so horrendous, most of the time, it is for the benefit of the devotees. You know, even if in our own eyes we're saying, oh, this isn't, how horrible is the situation? But actually, it's Krishna's mercy, and it could even be worse.
Can I correct you on one thing?
Sure.
You said most of the time.
Yeah.
Why would you say most? All of the time. Every single thing that happens to a devotee.
Yeah.
Every single thing that we take that as Krishna's mercy, the good and the bad.
Right, correct.
Not most of the time, 100% of the time. Krishna is right there, riding in our heart with us, making every little adjustment for our spiritual life.
And also in regards to trying to change things, you know, working with people and older people, it's very hard to change habit. And for example, somebody that has really bad money management habits, or very bad time management, or prioritizing events in life or things, you can't change this in people. But I find that in dealing with devotees, I just try to see their devotional side. Because once you see their devotional side, then everything.
That's a nice realization. And in ourselves, I mean, there's certain things that we can't change in ourselves, material things.
Correct.
That's why I read that Serenity Prayer. You know, to see the things you can change, the things you can't change. I mean, some devotees will never be, they just don't have it in them. Of course, Krishna could do anything, empower you to do anything, but the spider would never be able to move big, huge blocks like Hanuman could. And there we'll have definite limitations. Some of us may not necessarily be, I don't know how hard, unless Krishna came and especially empowered me, I'd never be able to dress the deities very well. I mean, I can't dress myself very well. I was probably one of those, brahmacharis that had, one kind of sock and another color sock and one shoe and another shoe that didn't match. And I would just never be able to dress the deities very, I could maybe get it done, but I'd never be one of these great deity dressers. So there's things we can, but these are material things. Not important. Anyone else have something to share? All right, then we're just about out of time anyway. So I think tomorrow, Ramananda Prabhu is going to be back at the helm. Is that right, Mataji?
That's right, yeah. He's coming tonight.
Oh, that'll be great. Be good to have him back. Have him back on our homeland again.
Yeah.
But you've done a great job, by the way.
So.
You've done a really good job kind of keeping, staying there at Command Central, and everything's gone on well. Ramananda's been gone for, how long has it been gone? Almost a month?
1 month, yeah.
Well, for 1 month, it was pretty flawless. You did a really good job, and we all want to thank you for that.
Well, yes, thank you. Thank you for supporting this and being every day here for the steady people, devotees. Really inspiring. Thank you.
I'm not here for everybody else. I'm here for myself. I'm here with open ears to drink the nectar and get everyone's association.
Okay.
Well, thank you all very much, and I'll see everybody back here tomorrow.
Great.
Hi. Hi. Hari Bol.
Thank you.